From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, a classic Coast to Coast show, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C. My, oh my, UFO sightings with Robert Stanley. Take a look at some of the video and pictures up there at coasttocoastam.com before he comes on. An asteroid the size of a tour bus flew past Earth today, so we dodged another bullet. So close, it was beneath some of the planet's satellites that are flying around up there. The rock, named Asteroid 2011 MD, zoomed by just 7,500 miles above the planet, making a sharp turn forced by Earth's gravity before winging off into space again. This space rock, estimated to be about 29 to 98 feet long, it could have caused a little damage had it hit in the right spot, so we dodged that one. Missouri River floodwater seeped into the turbine building at a nuclear power plant near Omaha, but plant officials said the seepage was expected, posing no safety risk because the building contains no nuclear material. The 8-foot-tall water-filled temporary berm protecting the plant collapsed early Sunday. Vendor workers were at the plant on Monday determining how they're going to repair all this. Scott Portzline, of course, been on the program numerous times. He kept an eye on Three Mile Island for a number of years. He's with us here. Scott, this situation to me seems more serious than they're saying. How about you?
Well, there's problems that add up, and sometimes they conspire to cause a major problem. At this point, I'm not very worried. But see, what we know now is more details. The aqua berm barrier that collapsed was actually sliced open by a small front end loader, also known as a bobcat. And they were using that to bring in sand and sandbags to protect the plant. And they sliced open one of their main barriers that they had added to the nuclear regulations that they followed. And when that happened, 2.5 feet of water flooded right up to the important buildings and washed away about 100 gallons of the sump pump fuel containers. So it's hard to imagine that following Fukushima, that the operators and inspectors didn't know to store pump in fuel for the pumps in a safe location. And it's these little things that bother me, or like how the NRC chairman visited the plant today. One of the first things that happened was they offered him a life jacket. That's how serious the flooding is there. But he took a helicopter tour around the plant, in addition to walking around the plant, and they flew the helicopter right over the same power lines that a helicopter crash landed last week. So much for the no-fly zones and the concerns about knocking out the power lines from an aircraft crash.
Scott, what about the possibilities of some kind of a meltdown there at this Nebraska plant?
Possible? I still don't see it happening. Sure. There's a possibility they'll have some problems with the spent fuel pools, but they'll have plenty of time to react to that. So I think things are still safe. I'm only minorly concerned that there'll be some serious problems developing, and let's just hope the operators stop making some mistakes there.
Let's hope. Thank you, Scott. The U.S. Supreme Court struck down a California law banning sales or rentals of violent video games to minors as a violation of free speech rights, its first ruling in a video game case. In a moment, Lauren Weinstein joins us. We're going to be talking with him about this case and also taking your calls this hour. The International Criminal Court has issued an arrest warrant for Libyan leader Colonel Muammar Gaddafi, accusing him of crimes against humanity. The court had grounds to believe that he had ordered attacks on civilians during Libya's 4-month uprising. This is very interesting, though, this International Criminal Court. It's worth a story and a show one day on just the power of this court to be able to go into countries, right or wrong, and go ahead and try to arrest somebody. Could happen here. Hugo Chavez's extended stay in a Cuban hospital is because they say he is in critical condition, according to a report in a newspaper. The Venezuelan president was last seen in public on June 9th and last heard from on June 12th on a phone call on Venezuelan state television was said to have been treated for a pelvic abscess in Cuba. During the call, Chavez said that the medical test showed no sign of any malignant illness, but rumors are all over the place that he's in critical condition. Who knows? A woman died from a heart attack that was prompted by waking up to see that she had been wrongly declared dead and was placed in a coffin. When she opened her eyes in her casket, the 49-year-old Russian woman could hear mourners around her praying, crying for her soul to ascend to heaven. She began to scream as she realized what was going on. She was in so much shock, 12 minutes later, she died of a heart attack. And up there at coasttocoastam.com, take a look at the world's ugliest dog, except in my opinion, there are no ugly dogs. There are no ugly people. They're just different. But take a look at this 14-year-old Chinese Chihuahua. They call him Yoda, and he's been named the world's ugliest dog by judges in California. Looks kind of cute to me. Okay, up next, Loren Weinstein. We're going to talk with him about video games, violent or otherwise, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. As I mentioned earlier at the top of the hour, the U.S. Supreme Court striking down a California law banning sales or rentals of violent video games to minors as a violation of free speech rights in its first ruling in a video game case, meaning basically that you can't stop that. You can't stop those sales. Here's Loren Weinstein, of course, involved with the development of the Internet for decades. Now, Loren, what's your take on this decision?
Well, yeah, hi, George. As you know, I'm a free speech, civil liberties kind of guy. And the court ruled 7-2, and I think appropriately, that there's really no fundamental difference between a video game and a book and a movie or a record, and that they're all forms of expression. That's what the First Amendment protects. It protects expression from government interference, which would be specifically what this is. And while we may not like violent video games, I'm not a big fan of them, the Bill of Rights is very explicit about this.
Should we then primarily be concerned about the parents' right to monitor in school their own child?
Yeah, I think the implication of the ruling is clear, that this is a decision to be made by parents whether or not they wish their children to have access to these materials, and by virtue of the parents' influence on schools, the schools' monitoring of this as well.
It's going to be interesting when we take some phone calls, Loren, just to see how parents and people in general feel about all of this. I agree with you. I think freedom of speech is paramount here, and that parents should have the rights to tell their kids, "Hey, you're not going to buy this stuff. You're not going to watch this stuff," rather than governments dictating to us what we can and cannot see.
Yeah, and there is a voluntary rating system for video games, just like there's a voluntary rating system for movies. The government doesn't tell theaters what age you have to be to see a particular movie. The MPAA does that on its own. Same thing with video games. They have an organization that does the ratings, and in most cases, in the U.S. at least, if you're below a certain age, you're not likely to be able to directly buy an M or an adult-rated video game.
The nation's video game industry, about $10.5 billion in annual sales. They are estimating that more than two-thirds of U.S. households include at least one person who plays video games on a regular basis. In this particular case, too, six other states have adopted similar laws as California. They, too, were all struck down by the court. By striking down these individual states, does that mean that the total, the whole part of the country, is now exempt, that they can go out and buy what they want, or does it still have to be done on a state-by-state basis?
I haven't read the entire decision yet, but normally on a decision of this kind, it's ultimately going to apply nationally. I mean, that's what the Supreme Court does. There may be little variations depending on how those other state laws were written, but the implication is very strong that if any of those laws reached was moving up the judicial ladder, it's going to end up in exactly the same place.
Now, I haven't bought a video game in years. So if a kid, let's say a minor, somebody under 18, wants to buy a video game and it's kind of racy, very violent, even though you say they're rated, can they still buy it on their own?
Well, it's the same situation as when someone who's below a certain age wants to go to, say, an R-rated movie. I mean, you can draw a parallel between an M-rated video game and an R-rated movie. Normally, a theater will not allow someone who's obviously below a certain age in to see an R-rated movie or an X-rated movie, for that matter. But there's no law that says that that's the case. So it's the same thing with places that sell video games. If a 12-year-old goes in there and tries to buy an M-rated video game, they're likely to be turned away.
The reason we have a movie rating system is because the movie industry did not want government intervention, and it's exactly the same thing that happened with the game industry. They don't want government intervention either. That's why they developed their own rating system.
Well, that's a good point. And of course, you know, most young kids are smart enough to have an older kid buy whatever they want anyway.
Yeah, well, no system is foolproof. I mean, what was really interesting about this decision, though, is the breakdown of justices and where they came down on this. Because the two justices who dissented from the decision were arguably the most conservative, Thomas, and the most liberal, Breyer, and for different reasons. And then of the remaining justices who voted, who made the decision, two of them, Alito and Roberts, were kind of wavering and saying, there might be conditions under which a law like that, if it was drawn more narrowly, might work, but even then it wouldn't be a majority.
No, not at all. What's new in the world of the internet, Lauren?
There's lots of interesting things going on as usual. One of the items in the news right now is the FTC opening up an antitrust investigation of Google. That's a pretty big.
Yeah, explain that.
Well, they're just starting it now, and they've just made their initial inquiries of Google, so all the details of what the FTC is after are not clear yet. What is clear is that Google's competitors and their various adversaries have been really pushing for this really hard because they really want to find a way to get a leg up on Google. It's a very strange kind of antitrust situation for a case like this, because normally when you look at antitrust, if you look at the classic cases like the breakup of AT&T in the 80s of Ma Bell, or even the antitrust case against Microsoft with Windows, you were looking at situations where it was very hard normally for consumers to switch to alternatives. With AT&T, in those days there really wasn't an alternative at all. And with Microsoft, changing your operating system from Windows was something way beyond the capabilities of most users. But with Google, if you want to go to Yahoo or you want to go to Bing or one of those, it's really just typing in a URL and clicking the mouse. There's plenty of competition there. So it's interesting to see that the FTC is doing this. And as we learn more about it's going to become very interesting to see whether they can really make a case that's going to hold up. I'm very skeptical about it.
Well, how big is Google anyway, Lauren? I mean, are they that huge?
They're very, very big. They've been very, very successful. They've organically grown. In other words, they've grown by virtue of having a lot of users who want to use them.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's a free marketplace. They've been very smart with what they do, right?
Yeah, exactly. And normally for antitrust, it's not just a matter of being big. It's a matter of being big and bad in terms of doing things that lock out the competition. That's how Microsoft got into trouble. Or there not being any competition. That's how AT&T got into trouble. But you don't really see those parameters with Google. It just doesn't look the same.
Well, Microsoft just got approved to buy Skype in a very multi-billion dollar deal, way overpriced as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And there's a deal that gets passed. If Google was going to try to buy Skype, they would have had their hand slapped, wouldn't they?
Well, I think the problem is that there are so many competitors for Google that would like to see Google
fall.
Yeah. That, Google can't even put a clock up on their homepage for one of their doodles without somebody complaining that there's something wrong with it. So they're when you become the player that is at the top of the chain, then everybody's going to be gunning for you, and that's what's happened to Google now.
How does Google make all their money? I mean, I've never paid Google anytime I've used them. How do they make it?
Most of it at this stage comes from advertising. I mean, it comes mostly from the little text ads that appear along with the search results and things like that.
So companies that feel secure that people are going to look at the products or click them will advertise on Google. And we're talking about a multi-billion dollar industry then, aren't we?
Yeah, it's a very big industry. And really the two primary developments that Google came up with that started this whole industry were their development of search algorithms, their page rank systems and things like that, and the advertising system, which is a very big auction system, an automated auction system that controls which ads display and how much they're paid and things like that. It's those two things together that created the environment in which Google has prospered.
Lauren, if Google tried to buy, let's just say another major company that is out there, whatever they're doing, do you think they'd get their hands slapped at this point?
Well, we can see an example now where Google has moved to buy a major firm that's involved in the supply of data for flight data, flight information, and that is being looked at also. But really, for an antitrust investigation, I'm not a lawyer, okay? So I'm not speaking from a legal standpoint on this. But normally, historically, for an antitrust case to succeed, there has to be some kind of showing of harm or real damage that's occurring, and you just don't find a lot of Google users who are all upset about. About Google. In general, most of them love to use Google, and most people don't pay anything to use Google either. So I'm not saying it's completely sour grapes on the part of Google's competitors, but there's been a lot of efforts by some of the competitors to do everything possible to cause problems for Google, and sometimes they use a method called astroturfing, which is coming up with people that will say bad things that appear to be saying it on their own, but they're actually being paid or induced to say those things on behalf of someone else. Obviously, it's a tough world out there. Competition is going to be tooth and nail, but it does seem unfortunate when the government is pushed to get involved in these kinds of things if it's not really appropriate.
I'll say, what happens with Facebook, Google? Is there ever a chance that those two could partner up?
Well,
just way too big.
Yeah, I would never say never, but under current circumstances, that seems like an unlikely coupling, because they are really both trying to go after the social, quote, social space, unquote, and Facebook has is obviously really the leader in that particular aspect right now, and I think it's fair to say there's not a lot of love lost between Facebook and Google. At this stage, anything can happen, right? I mean, you have to remember 20 years ago, neither of those companies existed, right? At this point of the game, I think we're looking at them being arch competitors more than arch friends.
How much is all of this directed toward money, Lauren? Government trying to make more money from these companies like Google and all these others?
Well, whether it's government trying to make more money or the companies, remember these are corporations. They're making money for their stockholders. That's part of the rules,
sure,
of the game of capitalism, right? And there's nothing wrong with that. The question is, do they do it in a way that's positive for users and I would argue for society in general. And so this is where a lot of the issues I get concerned about in terms of free speech and civil liberties and privacy and things like that come into play, because in general I have found that Facebook is kind of going downhill when it comes to privacy, for example, and in terms of becoming worse, and Google,
right,
has been becoming more and more an excellent example of how to handle those issues. So now again, when you get the government involved, if the government starts to pass laws that are trying to dictate some of these things, which some are actually moving through Congress now, then you run the risk of actually stirring it all up in such a way that everybody loses. So you don't want to kill the goose that lays the golden egg in these things. Government tends to have a habit of killing geese that way.
Lauren, any emerging companies out there that could make a run, for example, at Facebook?
Boy, at Facebook, I don't think so right now. I mean, one of the interesting areas at this point that's become very controversial is the organizations that are the companies that are selling various kinds of offers, daily coupon offers and things like that.
Right.
That's become a very very competitive business. And in fact, I was reading an analysis a couple of days ago saying really the main risk to that particular business model is the economy becoming better, because then you get into a situation where people are perhaps less willing to spend the time to get the coupons, the online coupons and things like that. But you know, as we've seen, you do have things come out of the woodwork that you don't expect. I don't think it was widely anticipated that Microsoft was going to buy Skype, and that has a lot of people who are fans of Skype somewhat unenthusiastic.
Good point. Lauren, stay with us. We're going to open up the phone lines next. We're going to take your calls about video games. Why don't you share your story or experience with us, or just talk about the internet in general. I'm George Norrie, and we're back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Robert Stanley joins us as we talk about his latest work, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C. It's an amazing story. When we come back with Lauren Weinstein, we'll take your phone calls on video games and the internet on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we are. This hour, we're going to take your phone calls with Lauren Weinstein as we talk about the internet and video games and all of these different issues out there. Lauren, have parents ever come up to you and, you know, said things like, I can't control the internet for my kid. They're just, you know, they just, wherever they go, whether they do it on their phones now, we can't stop them. Do they ever admit that to you?
Yeah, I get messages like that from time to time, asking, you know, how should I deal with this? I have, you know, various technical replies to it, but one of the things I try to emphasize is, yes, you want to exercise appropriate parental oversight of your children. On the other hand, you don't want to create a situation where the children feel that they're living under Big Brother. And unfortunately, what some parents do is they surreptitiously install software on the computers that literally spy on the kids. I think that while that, you know, the parents have laudable motives, I understand that, but I think that when the kids find out about something like that, the repercussions in terms of how they're going to view their parents and what they're liable to do later aren't necessarily good ones. So it's a very delicate balance.
Well, it sure is. Back to the phones now. Let's go to Bill and West Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Bill, there you go.
Hi, George. Hi. Lauren, I agree totally that there should be no censorship on video games, violent video games, which I don't like myself. I don't watch them myself, violent video games, or the internet, as well as sexy magazines, X-rated movies, DVDs, and men's magazines for adults, which I do like, and I do participate in, or read them and watch them, for adults, for consenting adults. What I'm trying to say is that I'm going to form a question here regarding not only violence, which you talked about, but sexuality, which for decades the Christian right, in particular in our country, the religious right, Republicans, and maybe the Tea Party too, wants to and still wants to censor, like the Moral Majority in the 1980s, the Christian Coalition now. My question to you is, do you fear, as I do, and this is one of the reasons I'm an atheist, do you fear, as I do, that the Christian right in America, if the next election we got a Republican president, let's say Michelle Bachmann with a Republican House and Senate, would not only censor the internet totally and violent video games, but censor all kinds of erotica, porn, if you want to use the word porn or erotica, for adults, consenting adults?
Well, I think that one reassuring thing about the current Supreme Court, even with its increasingly conservative orientation, is that they're really serious about the First Amendment. And if you look at the history of the court, even under the, in recent years, you're going to find that they rather consistently make decisions that are supportive of the First Amendment, even when those are unpopular. And in fact, in this decision, they actually kind of were specifically drawing the comparison between violent materials and sexual materials, and the issue of how speech alone is not normally going to, especially a speech about violence, like in a video game, is not going to reach the level of obscenity. Now, personally, I think that more generally in this society, we have a kind of schizoid view about this, where we say, well, you know, violence is okay, but sex is bad. Obviously, there's a lot of gradations in these things, but I think that kind of dichotomy doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. But in terms of the court and the law and what the next president could do, for example, I think the Supreme Court is pretty good about this, and it would take really major changes in a lot of justices to steer the court away from a strong support of the First Amendment. Of course, you don't really know what's going to happen. Things do change. But at the moment, I think that this is still a strongly First Amendment Supreme Court.
Absolutely. Let's go west of the Rockies to Santa Cruz, California. Anonymous there. We'll honor that. Anonymous, go ahead.
Hello, George. George. I have two questions. The first is, how easy is it to get an owner's name from just a license plate using the internet? And the second one is, if you go to sites like Yahoo White Pages and just put in a name, you can get the person's address, their phone number, their age, names of even names of household members. Is there any way to opt out, or is it just impossible because, for example, probably census information is now available to the public on the internet?
Yeah, you actually answered part of the question yourself. Your first question was about license plates.
Uh-huh.
That's going to depend on, that's going to depend on states to a certain extent, though there's now federal law that applies to that too, that provides some overreaching protection. But having said that, you know, when you go to paid services, when you go to private investigators and things like that, there's generally always going to be some way that if you want to spend some money, you can get that information. There's ways that people will call up and they'll lie and they'll claim there's someone else, or they'll file false papers or something. So you can't consider that kind of information really to be secure, despite the various laws that are now in place at the state and to a certain extent at the federal level. In terms of, you know, like Yahoo White Pages and the information there, the underlying issue is that there's a lot of public domain data, and municipalities have made a lot of public data available. They've often done it as a profit center to a certain extent.
Oh.
And once that data is out there, if it's publicly available, it's difficult to make the argument that it shouldn't be available on the internet. Now, there are some services that make this kind of data available. They aggregate it on the net, and if you go to them, you know, usually there's an online page for this. You can say, I want to remove this listing or that listing, and often they will honor those. But that doesn't mean that the underlying data isn't still there. So in general, that's not something where someone who really wants to disappear is going to have a lot of luck, and that's just kind of in the nature of the world we live in today. There's just no way to disappear.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Good answer, too, Lauren. Let's go to Carl in San Jose, California. Hi, Carl. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was really bothered by this law. That you're talking about the video games. I read the court case on the SupremeCourt.gov site, and then I read some of the cases on Google Scholar. Anybody can go on Google Scholar and get these cases. So there's three points I'd like to make about that. The First Amendment, of course, was passed and said that Congress could pass no law. Of course, the 14th Amendment also, I think, was misconstrued because the 14th Amendment, applying it to the states, the 14th Amendment was obviously about outlawing prejudicial laws against blacks. It wasn't really to say that every state in the union has to have the same legal scheme. The states only have to have one basic common thing, and that is the representative government. Now, the First Amendment was not to talk about, you know, art and pornography. It was talking about political speech. That's what was most important to them, was the political speech. And the third point is about one case that they quote in this Supreme Court decision. It's called Winters versus New York. And I don't know why I didn't read the dissenting opinion. But Winters talks about the same issue of free speech. They were talking about crime magazines that would have very lurid photographs. This was 1948. And they said it was could incite crime. So New York had these laws that were passed back in the turn of the century in 1900. And the Supreme Court, in this case, it went to the Supreme Court in 1948. They said, we will allow restrictions on free speech if this publication is inciting to crime. And to me, that's what the basic point is about these video games. They're saying that it's going to incite young people to crime. It's not really an issue of being related to pornography and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well the thing is that the literature doesn't really support, you know, there's no strong association that you can find in the literature that, that provably demonstrates that there is an association between violent video games and crime. It's, you know, you say to yourself, well, that makes sense. But in fact, a lot of studies show exactly the opposite. They show that a lot of kids are using fantasy violence, if we want to call it that, to divert off and not perform real violence.
Real stuff.
But beyond that, if you look back at history on this, first off, remember, the Constitution is what the Supreme Court says it is. So obviously we can get into interesting discussions about original intent and all these sorts of things, but ultimately what the Supreme Court says at any given time is what we need to deal with. It wasn't all that long ago when the same kinds of arguments that you were making there were being made about comic books. And there were congressional hearings about comic books, and they were considered to be inciting a whole generation to violence and delinquency. I think it can be argued that really what we're looking at with video games, obviously they're more explicit, but the underlying philosophy that says that children are going to be so severely damaged by these artistic expressions, and that's really what they are one way or the other, that kind of argument hasn't ever really been demonstrated to be true. So there's a lot of emotion involved, but not necessarily a lot of facts.
All right, good point, too. Let's go next to Jim in Jacksonville, North Carolina. Hey, Jim, go ahead.
Hello. You just brought up what I was going to mention there. I was wondering if I was the only one out here who ever heard of Frederick Wortham, and apparently you have, sir, because you're exactly right. Back during the 50s, they wanted to... There was an effort by him. He was a psychiatrist who led the fight to try to have the hearings set up. There were book burnings of comic books. And imagine all the multi-million-dollar movies and TV shows and things like that that would not even exist today if that kind of effort had succeeded by Mr. Wortham, who wanted to ban all comic, not just violent stuff. He wanted to ban everything, including such things as Superman and Donald Duck. You know.
Well, I think it's fair to say that all through human history, parents have been saying, "What's going to happen to the kids? Look at those kids." I remember "Bye Bye Birdie." There's a song in there. You know, what's happening to kids today?
Yeah.
It's always that way. Parents are always look at their children and say, "Oh, geez, they're turning out so horrible. This is going to be a disaster." Somehow the world does go on. And at the moment, video games are the designated enemy, but I think in the fullness of time, we'll find that they're really not that big a problem.
I agree. Thank you, sir. Thank you for bringing up what you did there.
Thank you.
All right.
These video games, Lauren, they do increase the younger kids' dexterity. There's no question about that. I mean, makes their eyes keener and their reaction time is quicker, isn't it?
Well, you're speaking to someone who barely mastered Pong, right? So that was pretty much at the edge of my skill set for those kinds of games. But yeah, I mean, there's lots of studies that show that compared with folks of our generation, I think at a much younger age, kids now are much more skillful in terms of these things. I think there's a lot of politics involved in these kinds of. Of cases, and I don't really like that. I like to look at the technical realities and the policy realities, and I think when push comes to shove on this, there are people who are trying to make a name for themselves to a certain extent, making a big deal about video games, and I think the Supreme Court really came down. As I said, it was 7-2. They really came down on this very well.
They sure did. Let's go now to John Windsor, Connecticut. Hey, John, thanks.
Hi, George. Well, I'd like to point. I'm an avid video game player, and I'd like to point out that some violent video games actually have storyline to them, like the Metal Gear series, and it has you questioning things about war, cloning, and there's conspiracy theories that you would love, like these people called the philosophers that were basically the U.S., China, and Soviet Union coming together and having these funds of money to fund World War II and end it, and then at the end of them, China and the U.S. playing against each other and causing causing the Cold War.
Yeah, well, I think that's another important point, which is some people tend to paint games with a very broad brush, even necessarily a game that has an M rating. The fact that it may have some violent elements, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it's glorifying that and that there aren't lessons to be learned. Now, I don't, you know, I'm not a big gamer. I don't claim to have encyclopedic knowledge of this, but I do see enough to understand that when someone says M means for forbidden, M means something that's going to destroy humanity in terms of the rating of the game being M, that obviously that's hyperbole. Or people trying to take advantage of the situation, for their own purposes.
Indeed. Okay, we go to Quinn in Atwater, California. We'll squeeze you in here, Quinn. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Telling your screener that I did my bachelor's degree thesis on video game violence for criminology. And that while it's a little dated, the study that I did was qualitative, as opposed to quantitative. I didn't hand out a bunch of surveys to classrooms full of college students. I had two students, and I watched them hands-on play a random assortment of games I collected from 1980 to 2000. And I documented every violent act I could find. And these were happening pretty quickly in some cases. What I found was that the number of violent acts went down as the games got more and more recent, but the act itself became very, very, very accurate, very much more graphic. There were rewards for committing them, usually a visual, you know, good job or perfect or a headshot, for example. The blood and entrails and things like that came out. And in listening to the last caller talking about Metal Gear, yes, there are violent video games with stories, Mass Effect, being one of them, one of the better ones, arguably. I'm a hardcore gamer myself, as my wife and two children will attest to.
When they see you, right?
Oh yeah. Well, living room. I can't get away from it. But but it irks me sometimes that these parents, particularly in these groups, will throw out how evil all this stuff is and never have touched it. He made a good point about Metal Gear. I don't know too much about that, but these stories is what they're doing is just more interactive. And I'm not a fan of rated R movies. I'm not a fan of pornography. And yet I'll play a rated M game. So people look at me and go, you know, how can you do one and not the other? To me, it's very simple. Pornography is real people. And video games haven't reached that level of looking just like us. Now, there's a couple that are close. L.A. Noire, which just recently came out, and Heavy Rain really, really pushed home how realistic things can get. And they drove home the point of consequences. If you pay attention, the consequences of your actions have far-reaching effects, and that's the lesson they're trying to teach. I just wish more people would look at what they're trying. There are lessons out there. They are trying to show you that there is good and evil, and there's a benefit and a consequence to every action. They might not be equal, but they're there. And so the player gets to experiment and say, is it worth it to me?
All right. Well,
I think that's a really important aspect of this. You have to look at these games in terms of not just their, you know, visible activity, but what the lessons are that they're teaching. And then again, what are the impacts that are actually occurring? That's why this automatic association that some people attempt to make between violent video games and violent real world actions just doesn't really hold water.
That's right. Hey, Lauren, thank you so much for giving us this valuable information. Up next, get ready for a classic Coast to Coast show.